Not My Family is a highly fictionalized, loosely autobiographical narrative that describes generational bad will, poor choices, financial malfeasance, and even murder. The generational craziness is propagated like a tidal wave threatening to drown everything in the deluge. Secrets are buried deep in lies, pacts sealed in blood. The truth concealed unto death, just to exert some control. I personally hate rubberneckers. It's kind of like, or this book is kind of like rubbernecking. The 30-mile pileup or 30-car pileup on I-75. You want to look away, but you're drawn to the carnage. Join me as the protagonist progresses along self-discovery and she recreates her identity and she discovers how to go home again. Not My Family can be purchased at FeliciaBaxter.com or directly from the author. Just navigate to Facebook, look up Dale's Angels Inc. and click buy now for your autographed copy. Now, let's return to the podcast.
God of glory, Lord of love. Hearts unfold like flowers before thee. Healthy as the sun above. Melt the clouds of sin and sadness, drive the dark down away. Giver of immortal hands, fill us with a light.
Welcome to another episode of Tennessee Fro is Reading. Hi, I'm your host, Felicia Baxter. Well, this week has been very interesting with a hurricane, and I've gotten two new writing jobs, and I'm still considering either rewriting or completing the sequel of my book, and I will probably touch on that in that part of the segment of chatterbooks and my own read. Well, I'll go over the crazy world that is self-publishing, and as an indie writer, how this may not be the best bet for it to get your product out there. I'll also start out with Black excellence and some other things that are just nationally cool. Invites to the barbecue, my take on the 2020 Democratic nomination, who I'm giving the side eye to, but don't believe that everybody needs to be canceled. I will talk about podcast reboot, any highlights of any of the 12 to 13, 14 different podcasts that I actually subscribe to, as well as my daily affirmations, which is becoming more and more, which I'm actually pretty proud of. And then the conclusion. Join me as I just trip through entertainment and what interesting things that I've been reading all week. And again, as always, thank you for taking the time to listen.
y'all. This is Tennessee Fro, a.k.a. Felicia Baxter, a relative newbie to the podcasting game. In an attempt to continue to live my best life, it seems as if I always have some type of hustle going on. Traveling Vineyard, India Hicks, writing my book, which is titled Not My Family, dropped last week. All of this comes at a cost. It's not free. It takes effort to create a buzz and to create content. I just need one person to start the stampede to my site, one person or company to become a patron, one person to buy my book and proclaim it to be the best thing since sliced bread. So please navigate to http://patreon.podbean.com/thetalkingfro to donate to my podcast, and also navigate to www.feliciabaxter.com to purchase my book. In advance, if we don't speak, thanks for your support. Welcome back to this part of the episode, or welcome to the beginning of the show. I've decided that even though I don't necessarily have to keep to the script or the outline of the show where I go boom, 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 I have the capability of adding and subtracting things as I see the need to, but this one I'm going to keep probably in its form, in some way, shape, or form at the beginning of the show. If my focus is going to be on positivity, why not start with positive things? This week in Black Excellence, I wanted to give a shout out to Odell Beckham Jr. I think he's this particular football player. I thought he was a loudmouth when he played in New York. Was it for the Jets, I believe? Then he got booted, and he is just supposed to start with the Cleveland Browns. Everyone knows that the Cleveland Browns football team or the organization has had the most loss and have been just a crazy, mixed up kind of sad story for the last in the history of the NFL for this last several years or decade. And most football players go there to die, basically. But something happened last year where they started winning games towards the end of the season, and they started to get like a little spark in their strut, kind of like the Bears with their 20-1 or 20-2 winning season. That was crazy. That looks like the Bears of the 70s. But anyways, he was traded to the Browns, and we thought it was a little bit of player haterism on the Jets organization, but that's their loss. Because he basically shows up at a Cleveland high school and gives each team member his branded pair of Nike shoes. I don't know, actually kind of do feel that the economic backdrop of Cleveland also is venerated in their Browns, kind of ragtag, scrappy, but they are a former steel town that's struggling to remain relevant. I was there a couple of years ago. I was shocked just by how kind of classy it was, but you could see it was struggling to make a comeback, just like a lot of Midwestern towns are. So his generosity, I think, I say all that to say, it's a struggling town, but I know his generosity was actually welcome. And those $130, $150 shoes that he gave each one of those grown kids, I think the parents as well as the kids themselves were grateful. And I thought that was just a really cool thing to do. Also, there is a book that's out by these twins that I actually saw on CBS Morning News. Even though I hate one of the newscasters, she actually One of the newscasters that was she always just seems depressed to me, and she kind of makes me sick. But they were talking about just the importance of being a boss. And the importance of self-esteem. It's by black twins called Antoinette Clark and Tricia Clark Stone. And the entire title is called Double Down, Bet on Yourself and Succeed on Your Terms. I wonder how many pages this book is because it is priced, and I know I'm crazy, but it is priced very similarly to mine. And it just got released recently, or it will, no, excuse me, it actually will be released on the 10th. And let's see. Available in Kindle as well as in hardcover. See how long is the book because my I honestly think it is probably like three times the price or three times the length, but there it is, 256 pages. Yes, it is double the length of my book, but it's priced the same. And I'm probably going to end up dropping the price of mine before or consider re-releasing it at the same price. But I'm thinking about that. But anyways. So don't hesitate to go to most of the places where books are sold and consider buying this book. Double Down, Bet on Yourself and Succeed on Your Terms, by two Doublemint twins, Antoinette Clark and Tricia Clark Stone. I think it's going to be a great read. I'm also reading this week, and I actually first heard about this on the Read podcast. It's by Igby Bossy. I'm lying. What is this? Because it that title is getting on my nerves. But anyways, I'm telling you the truth, but I'm lying. Igby Bossy is a Nigerian-born writer, and she's actually known, I believe she may also have her own podcast or has been a writer for well over a decade. And this is a book about her own beginnings. And she, as well as the host of The Read, have always talked about mental health and mental health issues and how we need to get help. And it's not a stigma, even though people would like it, or people have in our community have made it a stigma, which is a shame because I think there's a bunch of crazy people walking around that are hurting and that really need help. This book is a part of her healing, and it is actually a very interesting read how big parts and chunks of her childhood are missing from her memory. They're just gone, and she just remembers things a different way. And it shocks me, or maybe it doesn't really shock me because her father's actually a really good person, but how she's very close to her father, and her mother, who is still living, She describes her as a hard woman, and I think there is a bunch of mixed feelings and emotions when it has to deal with her mother. So pick up on that. It's also available on Amazon. That's where I ordered my copy this week, and I'm going to be actually reading that. And then there's just also positivity, even in our kind of screwed up legal system. There's a progressive prosecutor in Pennsylvania by the last name of Krasner. He is taking it as his personal duty to overturn wrongful convictions. And he's pushing a progressive movement called conviction integrity. Imagine a DA thinks that you need to be fired if your investigations are flawed, you withhold evidence, or you withhold evidence and you only present the evidence on the person that's the best for the crime, even though that person may look the best, but they actually did not do the crime, but you actually slant the evidence. Imagine going in with the idea that that's wrong and you need to be terminated for it. And that's what he's basically doing. It's led to the overturn of several life sentences of the wrongfully convicted. And it's leading a progressive movement. Hopefully, this progressive movement will be a beacon to the rest of the dirty dealings across the country in conviction reform. And also, as we are recovering from Hurricane Dorian, there's going to be another humanitarian crisis going on as Bahamas, the Bahamas got pommeled by a Category 5 hurricane. Basically, this hurricane sat over the Bahamas for over 2 days, and it basically almost destroyed the northern part of that island chain. José Andrés and his World Central Kitchen basically scrambled, got a boat, they got helicopters and plane, and now they're doing food stops all across the island. He didn't ask for permission. He tried, but nobody couldn't get a straight answer from anyone. And he's just going and feeding as many people as he possibly can. And he's just doing it. And he's taken this as his mission to use his platform and his own money to feed people. Yeah, that frou-frou food that he sells in his restaurants are not going to make a big difference. I think what his intent is actually pretty magnanimous, and I think people should just be. And I think I see gratitude there. He has been met with suspicion because I don't see him being motivated by anything but just feeding people. That is what he's a chef, and that's what he wants to do. You're hungry, you need to be fed, and I have the food, so let's do this. And I could stand a ham sandwich myself right now, so just so you know. So that ends this segment of Black Excellence and National Cool. And I think I've had a lot to say on this subject, but there's been a lot of cool things that have happened this week, as well as some not so cool things, but mostly always that the positive outweighs the negative.
Thank you.
So I like this part of the podcast because I'm truly following the 2020 Democratic nominations kind of closely because number one, we're almost through 2019, so they're getting ready to ramp up in earnest. But I wanted to make sure that the listeners actually had some idea about what are the top issues for the Democrats. Number one, the makeup of the candidates. Liberals make up a larger share of the party. This is probably one of the most racially and ethnically diverse, probably in a very long time. Immigration, same-sex marriage, race issues, decreasing health care costs, improving education, protecting the environment. I honestly believe, from a healthcare standpoint, Medicare in its current state will bankrupt us and it needs to be overhauled. I don't think any one of these fools actually has a way to do that. And the way to do that is not retracting Obamacare. I think there's going to be some necessary enhancements and several other things that's going to make it viable. We all are united in our hatred for Donald Trump. I'm not sure so much if the race and gender or even the color of the nominee impacts our enthusiasm, or it says it shouldn't impact our enthusiasm as a true diehard liberal, but I know it impacts mine. It's really hard to completely and blindly support JoJo Biden because he just keeps making these stupid missteps, and I'm finding that I am more in alignment with Kamala Harris, number one, because she's the underdog and she is not as to the left and cuckoo clock crazy as Elizabeth Warren. And I just completed a straw poll through the Governors Association that I think everyone should actually take a look at. They have as the front runners Biden, my boy Buttigieg, because I love his name, Kamala Harris, who I'm becoming more and more warm to, Sanders and Warren. They are all the top contenders for the Democratic nomination. Now, the other side, this has nothing to do with the Democrats. I've never in my lifetime seen a seated president, those in his party that are coming up that are challenging him in the primary. And it was just kind of weird that we had Donald Trump like stomping, but it didn't become more obvious that. Did you guys know that there are three people now coming forth that's planning on running against this president? I don't think we've seen any of this kind of nonsense since Civil War times, where they don't want to kick him out right now, but there are people that are coming forth that's challenging him that he needs to be removed. Never in the 20th and 21st century have we seen this kind of nonsense. But I am interested in finding out what Mark Sanford, Joe Walsh, and Bill Well, ex-representatives and former governors of Massachusetts, respectively, all think that they can do to bounce his butt up out of there. It would be a coup if not only that he does not get nominated by his own party, because if you look in the last 100 years, usually it's just a rubber stamp. You want to run again, you get the nomination. Even with the original G-Dub, his dad, there was no challenges within the party to his presidency and his re and his basically they rubber stamped his ability to actually run for president again, even though he greatly lost to my homeboy Bill Clinton. But this is crazy. There are three viable candidates that want to run against him. And I want to see how they think that they're going to do or undo all of the nonsense from the previous 4 years. Immigration is in shambles. Foreign policy is in shambles. Healthcare is in shambles. So I want to see how they will are going to right the wrongs of their own party member within the party themselves. And I wish I actually had remembered to include this in my side in my podcast Unwoke Chronicles reboot, but I wanted to basically bring up the whole Azealia Banks issue. Azealia Banks is evidently a rapper, and she looks like I think I've actually seen her on like one movie that they say came out about 3 years ago, but evidently this young girl has a reputation of going on social media and going off on people and name calling. Lizzo is another artist that most famously for having an inflatable booty on the VMAs just this past couple of weeks ago. I thought it was actually interesting, kind of in poor taste because it was a big old booty. I didn't think it was hot, but I thought it was bold. And I'm more interested in, I like her music. But this person just unleashed a haterated rant on Instagram and called her out for being a millennial mammy. But the question I had that most people have, who the ham sandwich are you? And who elected you to critique anyone? You can't do it by body shaming because it all comes down to player haterism. Lizzo has been in the industry evidently, and I didn't know this until The Read. Another podcast basically hit me to her, but she's been in the game for almost a decade, churning out, having what we used to call mixtapes, and actually had a pretty indie following. And now she's hit it big with two songs, three songs. Now number one after Old Town Road, which this Azealia Banks went off on Lil Nas X as he cashed his million kabillions of dollars of checks. But anyways, she's now number one. You are now hating on her because she was in the grind for so long, and now she's finally, after a freaking decade, has hit number one on the Billboard charts, and you still are scrambling, and nobody knows who you are. Girl, just go sit down somewhere and take the haterade home. And again, you, just like Antonio Brown, both of y'all just need mental health evaluation and get on Talkspace. Talk to somebody about your issues and why you need to remain relevant by running down another sister. I think it's deplorable and you need to just shut up. But that's the only person I need to get the side eye to because I think she actually has sincere mental health challenges that need to be addressed. And whoever is repping her or whoever should be her handler, y'all need to talk to this girl because this type of behavior is just deplorable. But anyways.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to this part of the podcast. This is now going to be redubbed Random Shit and the Unwoke Chronicles. Basically, it's a reboot of what everybody else is talking about in their own podcast. And why I get stuff kind of late. And it's because I can't be tuned in and plugged in and turned up at all times. I gotta work because I got bills to pay. But anyways, I also have realized just how much or where I am or when you're going to become inspired, because some of what I'm going to be speaking about, I actually wrote on a receipt for an oil change that was actually in my center console in my truck. While I was waiting to pump gas, I actually wrote down a couple of thoughts. But anyways, as I've said before, I think I actually have subscribed to no less than about 20 podcasts. Some of them I read or listen to most frequently, like the Black Man That Tips and the Read with Kid Fury and Chriselle. And it also makes long commutes really interesting while you're reading some of the gossipy chatter. But there were a couple of points that I actually bought up, that I actually pulled out. I don't even think that I even got this from my podcast. I think I actually got this from the actual news. CBS News in the Morning with Gail and the two Tonys, I most consistently watch. I have noticed that the younger Tony can be quite dismissive, and I want to throat punch him most of the time. As well as what, there's a depressing girl with the old school Halle Berry haircut. I don't really like listening to her because she just is depressing, and she has an aura of defeat around her. I don't know, and I think when she is with the younger Tony, he dismisses her, and then you can actually feel that then she gets mad, and then she wanted to diss him, but she's too polite. I don't know. But anyways, I just want Gail back in all of her goofiness because it actually makes watching the morning news interesting. But anyways, one of the things that they were talking about was how American is retiring the entire MD-80 fleet. For those of you that don't know about don't pay attention to flying, that is just a type of commercial jet that American has flown for evidently decades. And they are basically boxing the last of that particular jet as we speak. And there is a huge place in the desert, I don't know if it's in New Mexico or Arizona, where they just have thousands of these jets. And they even have Elvis's old airplane out there too. And it also led to the discussion of a guy that takes parts of these airplanes. It's called Moto Art of California. There's actually a table that I'm going to actually check out because I think it's just pretty cool. But anyways, the rest of the podcast, these are actually coming from the podcast. And there's two things that they've actually been going in on people. This whole deal with Jay-Z and the NFL, which is apropos because I'm sitting here recording this part of the segment as I'm simultaneously watching the Dallas Cowboys go back and forth with the whiny New York Giants. Is it the Giants? I just realized that I misspoke in my other part of my segment when I actually put Odell Beckham Jr. with the Jets instead of the Giants. He actually is an ex-Giants player that was traded to the Browns in off season. Who knew? But anyways, they are talking about how the Reed was actually talking about how they're not going to support the whole premise about Inspired Change initiative that has been provoked by Jay-Z and the rest of his comrades, and just how lengthy the lineup for Rock Nation is, how this is just a ploy for rich people to get richer. Yeah, we know. The NFL is a billion-dollar business, and Jay-Z is a billionaire. What do you expect? His lineup, what they were reading off, was just massively impressive. He has deep pockets. He can choose to use his platform for the betterment of mankind and making sure people actually are treated better, positive or negative. And he is right. He don't need the NFL, but the NFL does need him. And if he can actually carve out his niche and make a whole bunch of cash, I'm not mad at that, brother. And no, am I not going to cancel him. But what I am going to support is the songs of the season, because I am all about positive change in entertainment. And if you're going to put out a whole bunch of music that is going to entertain me and it's going to make me feel good, of course I'm going to support you. And it's even gravy on top of that because you're black. So to the Reed and the ultra woke followers out there, y'all going to sit down somewhere and let the rest of us decide who we're going to listen to and what we're going to support. And let that brother continue to make that cash. Just because you don't got a piece in it, just don't hate, because that's not hot. But what I do agree with is the attention being given to Malik Yoba. Malik, you ain't slick. That's what I wanted to tell you. He went off on some initiative and came out supporting transgender people, and he's actually hosting all of these sessions about education and awareness. However, back in the day when he was hot, evidently somebody just came forward to say basically that not only does he have interest in transgender women? Because I think I kind of knew that. I think that was the talk. It was also the talk that he could have been bi, or he was actually gay and he was just living on the DL. But evidently, he just admitted to being attracted to transgender women. But that in no means that he's gay. But anyways, he came back. It came out that that's not the issue, that he's attracted to transgender women. What the issue is he actually had sexual intercourse with the underage sex worker. She wasn't consenting at that time because she was only 13 when he hooked up with her. I don't know if it's true or not, but what I do know is the interaction took place in New York, and there is no time limit on when you can be prosecuted for endangering minors or sexual abuse. So that is going to be something that I think these gossipy podcasters are going to be following. And I know that I'm going to be following, because there is never any way or any reason to abuse a child, and sexual abuse is abuse. And Malik, you need to be ashamed of yourself. He actually tried to cover up by his admitting to the awareness of being attracted to transgender women. Like that was the issue. But the issue was that you actually had sex with the underage kid. Just saying, bro. Well, as I become more and more and I get paid more and more to work, I get to practice my craft in many different ways. I've published my own book, I update my blog, and I also publish this podcast. But what's going to keep it all moving smoothly is when I get other paid assignments. Well, I wrote this copy for a very useful cleaning device that I first became aware of when I stayed with a colleague of mine in Chattanooga, Tennessee. I had no idea that the company or the manufacturer, they're manufactured right down the road in Dalton, Georgia. But it's a great, a very perfect addition to any cleaning buff or OCD person. It's called Peachy Clean. And I am going to read you the copy that I wrote because I'm kind of proud of it. And then I thought it was actually pretty good. I'm what you could call a self-described scrubaholic, which makes my relationship with the Peachy Clean scrubber a bit eccentric, but that makes sense because a scrubber does have a personality disorder. It looks like a sponge, but kicks butt as a heavy-duty scrubber. The lattice work of the silicone gives it the feel of a sponge and allows it to hold soap and water more readily. It also gives it the durability that keeps it from permanently damaging your ceramic stove tops or scrape that unique non-stick surface on expensive cookware. And when it's paired with the non-abrasive disinfectant, it makes quick work of the soap and scum in your bathroom. And you ever notice that stench emanating from that sponge, like the dust from Pigpen in the Peanuts cartoon? It's the perfume made up of the byproducts of mildew and pathologic bacteria that are having a love fest in the sponge. The bacterial brothel, yes, I stole that from a different writer, raging within those holes and crevices of traditional sponges that make them absorbent are the condos of salmonella, slime-causing, smelly, dangerous organisms. But the Peachy Clean scrubber with that silicone matrix allows it to scrape off burnt food and particles, rinse away pesticides, all without leaving a sticky film. It is one of the best on the market and economical, with benefits of durability with pots and pans scouring, but also soft enough not to scratch up your delicate surfaces or bruise your fruit and vegetables. Repeat cleaning will get you about 2 or 3 months of odor-free, heavy-duty usage. It's so reasonably priced that you'll easily be able to replace it. And literally, it's locally sourced, y'all. It's right down the road from Chattanooga in the state of Georgia. For those of us that require an A-plus health department grade cleaning of our kitchens and bathrooms, this guaranteed odor-free scrubber paired with surface-specific cleaning solutions is the one to beat. So join other scrubberholics as we keep it clean and keep it fresh with Peachy Clean Scrubber. Now, back to the podcast. Welcome back to this episode, or this part of the episode of Tennessee Fro is Reading. And I'm going to just be going over a couple of things during this section of chatterbooks and what I'm actually reading. This past week has been interesting from a lot of respects because I escaped Hurricane Dorian, and it really wasn't a threat to me per se, but the Emerald Isle with the tornado that ripped up the mobile home park, or the actually it was the RV park. They need to get that straight. It's not the requisite trailers. It was the one of the many mobile homes and a lot of the tiny homes that people actually hunker down in, or actually some in some respects vacation and live in, that were basically tossed around like Tonka toys. I was in Tennessee for all of last week, which I'm supposed to be there anyway, so it wasn't as if I was escaping or running away from anything like I did from Hurricane Florence. I was just chilling and working like I work every single week. But I, in between running around, I actually got my own personal copy of Rainier Maria Rilke's Letters to a Young Poet. I actually had started reading that a couple of weeks ago, but I was able to complete all 9 or 10 letters this past week and then start on another book by another author. That's kind of a heavy read, but Bossy Igby, Igby's I'm Lying, But I'm Telling the Truth, or vice versa. But these are not the quintessential light summer reads. They are very mindful, and they actually have some things that you should write into your own truth. And it made it even easier for me to write my affirmations this past week. But anyways, one of the things that is most poignant about Rilke is this, and is exemplified by this statement: just be sure that you observe carefully what wells up within you and place that above everything that you notice around you. Your innermost happening is worth all your love. You must somehow work on that. He actually stresses solitude and self-reflection as a source of writing inspiration, and also just should be just a way to live. But you must write above all of that. I get the impression that the intended recipient of his letters was actually very lonely and was struggling with that, even questioning a belief in God. And Rilke is attempting to comfort, and he strongly suggests a refocus on things that you can control and look to the beauty of the beginning of things. And I ask readers of this particular Instagram post, what is your relationship with solitude? I'm always suspect with people that have to always be around other people. Some people do or are the life of the party, and that's fine. But then there's some people that just have to be around other people and into everybody else's business, but they don't know how to act themselves. I always wonder just how secure they are just with themselves. And as one of the seventh letter affirmations or things that I found poignant was, not only was this person trying to, the intended recipient of the letters, trying to understand and deal with loneliness, he was also trying to understand the meaning of love. And again, this was importance of having your own self together, being able to love your own self. And I think one of the many truths that was expressed through these letters was just how progressive Rilke was in his view of love in a matter of a lot of things. Because he was emphatic that two broken individuals getting together and losing their identity is not love. It's just simply a recipe for disaster. He is an advocate for protecting the other your individuality as well as the other person's individuality. And he says women, the ability of women to be able to do this was a lot better. The chances of women being able to do this was a lot better than even men. And he was also therefore advocating the equality of women, not in a lot of respects. He didn't mention anything so far about voting or anything like that. It was just because this was written in 1904, but he was also advocating the equality of women even in during this paternalistic time period. That's what made this piece so poignant, because the advocation of the healing nature of solitude, being and knowing and loving yourself, as well as the importance of love, but you can't love anyone until you yourself love yourself. I think all of these were progressive and are so applicable even in today's time. And this is a good lead into a post that I was tasked to write for my book, Not My Family. And I'm still trying to convince people to read the book. But again, even though I was doing my usual work in Chattanooga, Tennessee, I had the pleasure of picking up a couple of short-term paid contracts through Fiverr. I wrote a press release for the Motherland dot online, as well as a suggestion for some comment on deb80.com. And the reality of getting paid to write continues to floor me, and people actually want to read and want to know what I have to say. So I'm always floored with that. But my book itself, even though the easy part was actually writing the manuscript, this whole publishing and sales and the actual work of the book itself truly starts after you turn in your manuscript. There's a lot of things that I wish I could or would have done. I wish I could have or would have known I could have done this and written this book traditionally. I think I had enough. The book has enough strength on its own that I probably could have gone the traditional route. I wish I had believed in myself and just got it done. I wish I would have a traditional agent advocating for me to get the best deal instead of selling me just higher price packages within the self-publishing realm, and also selling me the services that I could actually utilize. I'm finding that after you self-publish in general, no one will pay attention to your work because they expect it to be garbage. But I don't really think that applies to me. But I think the work itself has to, there's more work that I need to be done on it. Marketing should start even before the manuscript is complete. And you don't need a hard sell, again, to buy more services right up front. I think that is probably one of the most galling and annoying things I've had about this whole process. Editorial services that enhance or represent what I should have or wanted to say. It's just not some type of you plug it in to some type of app and it just go over the words and spits out a final word count in a final word count, but no suggestions and how, again, to enhance the work. I wish I have a publicist that would have actually read the book or is a book reader in general and could provide more thoughtful suggestions than random follows or really generic fulfillment of publicist services. I already have an online presence. what can I do differently to not only increase SEO, but all that and translate those things into sales? You're not helping me. And I think the anonymity of all of these service covers anyone or keeps anyone from any type of responsibility. It's just like no one is invested in your success but yourself. And you have to pursue those things that will make you successful. And one of those things I think I am continuing to do is continuing to write. That's how I'm going to increase my craft if I'm serious about this. But I'm going to read this little excerpt from one of my posts that I hope you will navigate to FeliciaBaxter.com to read later. Not my family itself was not and will never and that was never meant to be a light read or a typical fluffy beach read. My hope would be that in the short read, you would find an attempt to consider alternative actions and feelings not in a vacuum. One of the finer points that I hope would ring true is finding forgiveness. Forgiving yourself for the blame you placed on people not emotionally equipped to be a soft landing. The main character, Frances Nay Maria Butler, would have to learn to forgive her stepfather for being a douche because he never learned or would learn how to be a stand-up father, his own father dying when he was young. She would have to forgive her dead mother, Darlene, who in her severe depression after the death of her twins, she would wear her depression like a cloak her entire life. She left Texas and assured security and true love because in her grief, she returned to what she knew. Frances would even have to forgive her biologic father, Tony, because he blindly trusted a clearly damaged Darlene. And for 40 years, never heard from Frances, never questioning the silence. She will have to forgive Angela, who also being damaged, would make just stupid decisions. But it doesn't mean she's a bad person, nor does it mean she was or would have been responsible for actions or consequences either. I think that means that she should not consider herself still responsible for Angela's continued bad decisions and the consequences she would reap from those bad decisions. Forgiveness doesn't mean acceptance of poor actions, and it does not authorize a relationship, nor does forgiveness mean you endorse them in any way. It also does not give them license to continue to operate in the same depraved way with the adult person you have become. It is even Stevens. You don't owe them anything, and neither do they owe you anything. This book touched on the realization that failure is an option, but so is success. Unlearning negativity and looking forward to new experiences and being present. You should not allow fear of failure to keep you from life. This book is also a homage to true love. Love does not hurt mentally or physically. You don't have to give up who you are to be in love either. That's a shout out to Rainier Maria Wilkie. But more importantly, self-knowledge and wholeness is attractive and necessary in successful relationships. To love, you must love yourself. None of these themes are new and are discussed in a variety of ways in other works and probably will continue to be discussed. My hope is my presentation that the reader will like my approach and will encourage them to want to read more. And that's all I've written for this particular segment of Tennessee Fro is Reading. And I hope you enjoyed this particular read and you will navigate back or come back and listen to further episodes to find out my interesting takes on further reads. Thanks. Welcome back to this part of the podcast, and this is becoming more and more what I am living for, to the point where I want to begin and end with positivity in this podcast. And I think even after the week that I have, it is imperative that I understand that every single week we should write out those positive things and focus our minds on the positivities. Just sit still and think of good intentions and positivity. I think because when negative things do happen, we're able, our response to them becomes different. So, and I believe just like Humble the Poet has said in his book Unlearn, this shit doesn't get easier, we just get stronger. We have to embrace the struggle, and it's because this is how we establish our identity. And if people don't like you or don't like who you are, change the people. Don't change yourself. Be very careful of people that want to speak a word into your life. You really don't have to listen. You have to have selective deafness in some respects, because sometimes the negative words and sometimes just out and out lies are spoken to your spirit, and that can actually have a negative effect on you. And this is all about not speaking negativity into our truth. And as I was running away from another hurricane, I'd sat out Dorian in Tennessee. This is like this third hurricane that I've actually come to a mountain, put a mountain between myself and a major storm. And it's really kind of crazy what I actually took with me. I took some of my favorite records in a portable record player. I took some books, my computer, and of course my medication. But I looked around and there wasn't a whole bunch that I knew couldn't be replaced or that I would truly miss. Even the pictures of my niece and nephew and family members, because I still have the memories in my mind, but the pictures themselves, even though they were up on a high shelf, I was thinking, you know, it wouldn't kill me if those things got destroyed, because the important thing is I still have the memories and I still have some of the people with me. So that was most important to me. When you're packing to evacuate, you have to really figure out what is the most important thing and what you actually need. And then you realize the futility of it all and how things are just not worth a whole bunch, because you can actually replace all of those things. You become very focused and you really realize what is the most important things when you have to leave things behind, but always knowing that things can be replaced. My number one priority now is going to be just focusing on still producing quality content, spreading love, inspiring ambition, and positivity. That's why I'm so driven to continue to produce the podcast, because I think if I produce a quality product, the support will come. And I'm just, that's why I'm so excited about my opportunities to be able to post little snippets on a new website or a new app, instead of focusing just most of the things that I actually do, posting on Instagram and Facebook, etc. I actually will be recording clips of my opinions and then uploading it for comment on a new app. The new app itself is called Deb80. Once the builders or the people that engineers actually get a handle on it and get it actually working, I'm hopeful to be a moderator on that site. It seems like I have some positive and some negative things to say. Nothing trolly, but I see this as a newer platform for commentary in what's going on in today's world. And he actually hit me up again on Fiverr. That site itself is becoming a blessing. I was able to help the Motherland Online write a press release for a new t-shirt line that's getting ready to drop October 1st in celebration of their third anniversary, as well as the sayings venerating her recently deceased mother. And I'm just having a ball interacting with clients and being able to create written word and actually get paid for it is actually kind of cool. That's why there's so many good things going on in the world, and it's so easy to write my daily affirmation, because every single day, even the grind of my day job, every single day comes with its own blessing, its own challenges, and I'm just looking forward to the newness of it all. And this is actually, this wraps up another episode of Tennessee Fro is Reading. Thank you guys for joining me and listening to me ramble on about the excitement of reading, as well as what I'm writing next. I'm just actually just so grateful for people taking the time to even listen to me. That in itself is a blessing. And I'm always just so grateful for the power of my mind, and I'm going to continue to let it find solutions needed to create positive change. And I hope you will too. Stay tuned for another episode, which will be dropping next weekend. And don't forget, you can drop me a line of comments at TennesseeFroisReading@gmail.com. You can leave a short message on my voice over internet line. And I really will write this down. If you would like to, please leave me a 2-minute voicemail at 423-463-0658. No trolley messages. And if your comments are actually poignant, it'll actually be read and I'll give you a shout out during the podcast. Also, if you would like what you're hearing, don't hesitate to become a patron through Podbean. Just put five on it. Navigate to my PayPal link, paypal.me/FeliciaDAI, to leave a tip. And in the next coming days, my August podcast episodes will be moving behind a paywall, and you will actually have to become a sponsor or a premium member to be able to access that content. So please stop freeloading, because anything worth anything is you're going to have to pay for it. But I'll continue to post. I'll continue to create positive content as long as people continue to listen to it and I find it fun. You guys have a great day and enjoy your week, and I look forward to entertaining you again next week.